Welcome to Creative Spirits Unleashed, where we talk about the dilemmas of balancing work and life. And now, here's your host, Lynn Carnes.
Welcome to the Creative Spirits Unleashed podcast. I'm Lynn Carnes, your host. My guest for this episode is Laurie Kaplan. I reached out to Laurie to be on the podcast after hearing her talk about her experience of the Gaucho Derby on the Greg and Dan Show, which is in Peoria, Illinois. Now, the Gaucho Derby is a 500-kilometer adventure race through Patagonia, and it's billed as the world's toughest horse race. I think that's an understatement. Three of my former podcast guests were involved in the Derby. It was Kansas Carradine, Stevie Delahunt, and Warwick Schiller. So I was paying attention to their adventures as well, watching videos as it was going on and looking at some of the map and the terrain and really blown away by what was happening in this particular race. So in this podcast, Laurie shares her epic moments. Now, some were high notes, and there were plenty of low notes as well. As we spoke, it's almost as if she were reliving some of those moments, which you will hear as you listen. And also, I would say listen to the whole thing, because at the end, you will hear how she puts it all together when I ask her, what would the Laurie of today tell the Laurie of August 2022 that decided to do the race? Her answer just moved me to tears. So here's what Laurie has to say about herself. Laurie's a free spirit who seeks living at a deeper level in the many things that she pursues, whether it's raising her two boys who are both successfully off at university, riding horses, caring for her farm, rocking out on her drums, and guiding others to their epigenetically best life. She recently experienced the Gaucho Derby in Patagonia, Argentina, and is still processing the profound expansion this is opening for her. I hope you enjoy this podcast with Laurie Kaplan, and please do be sure to share it with your friends. Laurie, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Lynn. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm thrilled that you are here because I can actually remember where I was, a couple of weeks ago when I got to listen to your conversation with the Greg and Dan Show.
Yeah.
I was in Scottsdale, Arizona, driving somewhere. I was visiting my sister, going to the Cactus Raining Classic. And I was so excited to hear you talk about the Gaucho Derby. And it was only 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait. We need a lot more about the Gaucho Derby. It deserves a lot more time. I have a lot more questions. And I reached out to you and here we are. You're on the podcast to talk about the Gaucho Derby. Yeah. So I'm probably going to duplicate some of their questions, but here's my first question. You have just completed the Gaucho Derby. Could you just set some context for people listening who may not know what it is and include in your context what made you choose to put yourself in Patagonia for this event?
Yeah. So the Gaucho Derby is organized by a group called the Equestrianists, and they've been doing something called the Mongol Derby, which is in Mongolia, 1,000-kilometer, 10-day race. They added one, I believe the first one was in 2019 in Patagonia, and they've done a couple. COVID kind of interrupted some of their plans, but the Gaucho Derby is really an adventure race, 10-day, 500 kilometers. You're going over extreme terrain, extreme weather. You're getting on up to 7 different horses over the course of the race. And you're out there with a very small kit. You have 22 pounds maximum, which includes all your food, gear, and you have to navigate using a Garmin and your senses.
Mm. So I watched a little bit of this. Mm-hmm. I have several of my prior podcast guests were there. Kansas Carradine, and Warwick Schiller were both along with you doing the race. Stevie Delahunt works with the Equestrianists, and she's done the race, and she's also one of your organizers and often for some people trainers. Yep. So I had a lot of interest. Yep. I had been watching the trackers because they put live trackers on you, and we could see the dots moving on a map.
Right.
And if you think about Google Maps, you know, or something, if you don't put the satellite view on, it looks like a nice flat map. She laughs. She laughs knowingly. It was a couple of days in before I had the good sense to go ahead and put the overlay on where I could see the terrain you were on. Holy cow. This is not trail riding on steroids. This isn't even like cowboy riding like in the Western movies on steroids. This is something altogether different. Describe the terrain a little bit for me.
So, well, each leg had different terrain. And, you know, I laughed. I thought, oh my God, there's no way my horses would even consider doing this. The initial few days was sort of scrubby desert with these really pricker bushes, and they looked soft, but they were kind of hard. So in effect, you were continually hopping over these things as you were galloping or walking, whatever gait you happened to be in. And up and down, lots of rivers, gentle hills, steep hills, loose gravel. And then of course there were the bogs, which came a little while later into the race. Two types of bogs, this beautiful golf course looking bog where you just want to gallop across this flat green grass when in fact you sink up to the hocks in mud. Often at that point, having to hop off the horse and let them sort themselves out. And then there are the rock bogs, which, if you picture a lovely river flowing with a nice rocky, sandy shore, think, oh, that looks great to walk on. When in fact, you sink even deeper. And then the horse really panics because it's surrounded by these rocks. So as it tries to get out, the rocks are flailing. Luckily, I didn't experience this personally. One of the fellow riders, my partner Wendy, did. And yeah, you just gotta hop off and let them get out.
And they have to get the horse has to get themselves out of a rock
For the
bog. They
most
can.
part, yeah, there's times when you do have to, I mean, you're leading them as much as you can, but you also have to get out of their way so you don't get hurt potentially.
So is the horse okay when they come out of a rock bog? I mean, I'm picturing.
We think of our horses and they nothing against our horses. Our horses are lovely, but these horses live in this area. They don't live in stables like we keep most of ours. They're just out there in herds and they're collected when they're needed. So this is their land. They're master of this.
So they might have even gotten themselves in a rock blog before. Rock.
Probably.
I'm calling it a blog, a rock bog. Before they might have done that and got themselves out, and then they carry on.
Correct. For the most part, they might be a little sore, take a couple off steps, but then they usually move on just fine.
That's just amazing to me.
It is.
Okay. And let's talk about 22 pounds. So the 22 pounds is your tent, your
Sleeping bag.
food.
Sleeping bag, sleeping pad. There were certain things we had to have. So we had to have a tent that could withstand the wilds and winds of Patagonia. Mine actually broke the night before the race started, but I had a repair kit. So an insulated sleeping pad, a sleeping bag that could go to really, you know, well below 0 Fahrenheit. And then ideally a camp stove that wasn't required, food, and whatever else we needed, any medications, you know, personal items, changes of clothing.
See, all those things you're describing, I'm like, I don't know how you fit all that on one horse and 22 pounds.
Well, I left a lot out.
So tell me about how you made those choices. Like, it seems to me like part of the mental training for something like this, and I see this as more of a mental game.
Yes, very much so.
And when I'm saying mental, I don't mean up in your head kind of mental.
Right.
I'm actually talking about the whole body, whole brain, whole sort of emotional fortitude that it takes to make those kind of choices that could be life and death. So tell me about when you're sitting, getting ready to take off for the race, and I want to kind of talk through the race, but when you're making those choices, and you had what, 40 people doing this, so you had 39 other people making choices. Y'all were bound to be checking with each other, influencing each other, talking about, and I can imagine that sometimes the influence is helpful and sometimes it's not. So now you're having to decide who's got the best ideas, who doesn't, all that. Tell me about that process.
Well, first of all, just to, to comment on the group of people, amazing group of people. I was excited before I went to meet the new people because it's like going to camp, right? And it's all international and some really high level horse trainers, Double Dan, Warwick, Kansas, Elliot, many other people who were highly accomplished in the equestrian world. And so I was excited to meet them. Wonderful people, all super helpful. There was definitely some you could tell who were more competitive, and that's fantastic. That's awesome. I was not in that group. I was there for the experience and hopefully to come out unscathed. But yeah, you lots of everybody was there to help each other. Absolutely. They all took the time, especially, I mean, really the whole time. If you had a question, they were there to help. So.
Well, and I believe that their intention would be to help. It's just making that choice of which is the thing I need versus what they need, right?
So some
So
of the things.
how did you sort out what you were going to put in
So I was
the model?
overweight when we did the weigh-in, which we did the day of the race.
And how much overweight were you
I
by?
think I was a kilogram over, which doesn't seem like a lot, but I had to, in fact, take a lot out. I took some food out, which was fine. I shared with Wendy. So Wendy is my lifelong friend, and she was my partner. I roped her into doing this. So we shared food, which was fine. I dropped my Leatherman tool because she had one. I knew I wasn't going to be alone, most likely. So what did she have that I could use? What did I have that she could use? That kind of thing. I think I probably dropped some clothing. Pretty much wore the same thing most days, which is fine. Couple other tiny little things got dropped.
So how many pounds is a kilogram?
2.2.
Is that right? So I could see all that. Yeah, that's a lot. Two pounds is a lot, actually.
The Leatherman was really heavy. So I wish I had had a smaller neck. Oh, and I had to take out my headlamp, which was a bummer, but I used the flashlight on my phone. So, I like to call it navigation on steroids. Like you're navigating so many different things, not just the.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking about. I'm just putting myself in your shoes because this is going to be the only way I ever do it. I'm not going to go do the Gaucho Derby, I don't think. So I'm putting myself in your shoes though, and I'm thinking about the choices I make and what do I want to carry with me? And there's a lot of metaphor to this because I think about the things that we carry emotionally that are, we always talk about our baggage. It seems like a emotional baggage seems like, I don't know, like a cliche or something, but it's real. We carry stuff. And how do you choose what not to carry and what consequence? Like, for example, I'm thinking, okay, how brilliant that you commit to ride with Wendy and then you're going to share things, right? We're going to help each other carry our loads. I love that.
And we've done that through our lives, so it was really beautiful.
Oh, that is beautiful. Now, here's my big question about that Leatherman tool, because that's always been like, in our family anyway, it seemed like at least every other Christmas it was something that we got dad, or whatever. Like it's been a long, like I've had Leatherman tools in my life for a long time, but I don't spend that much time needing them. So I'm curious, how did you use your Leatherman out there? I'm sure you used it.
Well, I mainly use the knife. We mainly use the knife. There was at one point that one of our horses got in a wire fence at night, and the Leatherman tool was basically useless. Luckily, we were staying at a vet check where there were a couple staff members, and he had actual wire cutters. The Leatherman was not my favorite tool.
Interesting.
I would have wished I had just a knife. That would
Just
have
a
been.
good knife and maybe a set of wire cutters. I could see the wire cutters being useful because From what I understand, you guys had to encounter, you encountered a lot of fences.
Oh,
And I'm not
yeah.
saying you would have cut your way through a fence,
No,
but
no,
as
no.
you did, might have had to cut your horse out of a fence. So
Yes.
tell me about the fences and the gates, because I know that was the difference with a lot of people and the time they were making.
Yeah, they're really hard to explain. Wendy and I have a few videos of each other doing them. So we're riding on private land where there's a lot of livestock, sheep and cattle, a lot of sheep, thousands of sheep, which was cool because I raise sheep, a tiny flock, but it was really neat. So there's a lot of fences, and they will go on forever. And then occasionally there will be a gate. And to find the gate, you try to think like a rancher, where would the livestock move through? And this is actually something that the pre-race training covered, which was cool. Also look for tracks, livestock tracks, although a lot of times you're on a beautiful track and then poof, it's gone. Like, where did the animals go?
Yeah. Did they just get abducted by aliens? Like, did they
Right.
fly up in
No,
the
you think
air?
you've got it made. We got a trail. The trail's gone. And
What happened?
then the gates. So they're really rickety, rackety, old pieces of like driftwood almost,
Wow.
strung together with wire. And then there was this lever system. So you'd have a horse, well, kind of a horizontal piece of wood that fit on one end of the gate and then the solid end of the fence. Solid is not the right word.
You're picturing them going, oh yeah, these are not anything like I've ever seen before.
No, and then they're jimmy-rigged into these loops of wire. So you ride up to a gate. A lot of times we take a picture of it and think, okay, I'm going to work backwards when I'm on the other side. So you open and then it like flings about, and then if it's windy, it's flinging, and one person always gets off their horse, other people hold them, so then the group goes through, and then you stand there kind of like, how is that again? And sometimes they would go back together nicely, and other times, it'd be like, wait, this? No, that? And then you'd have to shove your whole body into twisting this driftwood piece back into the wire. And Wendy and I are thinking, why can't you just use the tartar gates that we have? We'll ship them
Yeah.
down to you.
Yeah. Well, I'm picturing, like, I'm thinking about the kind of things like when you're trying to go somewhere and you're trying to close something and you know you have to close it. Like, there's
Yes.
not an option
No,
to
no, no,
leave
no,
this
no.
gate open. That's going to be a problem.
Yep.
But to feel like it's almost like the little evil
Yes.
planners are like setting you
Yes.
up,
Yes.
to like make things more difficult. Like, it's like, where's the candid camera to watch us like try to solve the puzzle of the gate?
Absolutely. There were times when we felt like Big Brother was watching us, and HQ was watching us, although they not like on camera. They knew where we
Yeah.
were on the course. Yeah.
Yeah. But I when I started my horse journey, which is not that long ago, just the act of saddling a horse, my fingers would be rushing and fumble fingers and trying to get to the end. And, the great training I got working with all of my trainers, Bruce Anderson particularly, because he would say, slow it down one frame at a time, but trying to get to the end, and I'm picturing me at a gate like that going, how do I get this thing back together? So that had to be really a great way to build your mental tools.
Absolutely. One of the things that I kept reminding myself the entire race was to pace myself. And I had just come off a year when I did not pace myself, and that's a whole nother story where I pushed so hard I actually, made myself sick. So pacing, a lot of pacing myself.
Yeah. And how well did that work for you? Like, did you find yourself like really noticing that I'm a different person than the one that made myself sick? As you
Yes.
were out there in
Oh,
this
yes.
environment, tell me about that.
Yes, no, it was great. Well, there were only so much you can rush. You couldn't rush those gates. And yes, they had to be closed. There were times when we had horses that were so slow, they would only walk. we could not push them. So then I would just go back into that pace myself. There was a time we were up on what I call Suicide Ridge, and there looked to be no way down. Obviously there was, but I got off my horse and kind of scouted the cliffs to see where we might go down. And I was counting to 10 over and over, pacing myself so I wouldn't fall into fear.
I can imagine. Like, I'm not fond of heights anyway. And I'm thinking, I was actually on a ride last summer where we were up on a ridge and I could see where we had to go down below. And this was not a cliff. But I actually had to catch myself in a moment of fear going, I don't know how we get from here to there. Like, this looks like it's too much to go down on a horse. And, when you take it one step at a time, next thing you know, you're at the bottom. But if you look at the whole thing, it can friggin' freak you out. So, how did you find your spot? Like, when you're on the cliff, you're counting, you're seeking your spot. What happened? How did you find your spot? And kind of what happened inside of you when you suddenly realized this is the next step I want to take?
Well, I walked sort of down and around. We could have always gone back. But that, didn't want to do that. Plus, the wind was insane, and we would have gone back into the wind. Our horses were completely knackered. Getting towards the end of the day, so I found a way down. Also thinking, okay, these horses can move through this. It's not something I'm used to. I'm not an endurance rider, so I'm not used to riding this. So I'm like, okay, I bet the horses can go here. Wendy and Kayla, the other girl who was riding with us, started to come over to where I was. I'm like, okay, guys, I think we can go this way. So we picked our way down through dicey, boggish areas and some woods. We saw cattle tracks, which was always encouraging because the cattle can move through, the horses can move through. And then we ended up getting stuck that night again. But at least we got off the ridge and there was a sigh of relief. And it was like, okay.
So tell me about where you got stuck again. Tell me
Yeah.
about that. Because these are
So,
the kind of things I think about is like, just where are all the moments where things are just not going smoothly, and how do you work through them?
yeah. So there's, it ended up being a funny story, although it did lead to our being partly in the adventure category. I mean, that day was one of the reasons why we ended up in adventure category. So there's competitors and adventure. If you don't get to a certain point on the race by a certain day, you're not going to finish it in time. And you will need to get into a truck and be lugged forward. So, and it's not that just we couldn't go fast enough, a number of different things. But at this point, so we got off that ridge, we were took a left on a rock face, and the horses just literally wouldn't move. I've got pictures of them. They are standing. It was quarter after 5. Race time ends at 6. Riding hours end at 6. You get penalized after every minute. This was day 3. So we didn't want a penalty. So it's quarter after 5. We thought, should we call HQ? What should we do? And we were in consensus. Right was where we came from. That was no option. Left looked like a thick forest that we couldn't go through. We could have. And so we called HQ and they said, good call. We've got Gauchos kilometer away from you. They just helped somebody else. So we call it our Gaucho 911 night.
I love it. I think I would have been very happy to hear that there were gauchos. And are you communicating on satellite phones? Because I don't get the picture that there's a lot of cell phone coverage out
No,
there.
just through text on our
Okay.
inReach tracker.
Got it. Got it.
Actually, there's an EarthMate app where you can text through, but it
I
takes a while
see.
because, because the satellites are not abundant.
So you were using satellite because that's the one thing that's out there. So the gauchos come to you at after.
Yes, and it was hilarious, and we were relieved, and we have video of this, and it's beautiful. They're starting to yell, they're coming up the ridge, and they're like, "Hola!" And we're like, So three of them ride up. Toby, one of the medics, the intrepid medics, I cannot speak highly enough about the medics that they had. Amazing. Faku, one of the vets, and then Nico, one of the gauchos. So they rode
Yeah.
up, led us down to water. You had to camp every night where there was water.
Right. And I was thinking that was your dilemma is you were sitting, you couldn't just camp where you were because you had to have water and from what I understand, grazing for the horses as well.
Right. And we looked on the map, we didn't see any water.
Yeah.
So that's the other reason why we called.
Yeah. Because you could have been like wandering around in the wilderness and you're going to take your penalty if you had to get to water, but you didn't want to have to use that energy and
Yeah,
take that
yeah,
risk. And yeah,
yeah,
I could see that.
yeah.
So how far away were you from the water when the
Oh,
three rescuers came?
half a kilometer
So it
probably.
was so close.
Yeah, but it was a tiny stream. I mean, it wasn't on the map.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we would have just had to keep lumbering through the forest.
Yeah, wow. And so they then you they find you the water, they set you up. And I want to, by the way, go back to the adventure versus competitor. It really like all it is they put you in a different category. Is that right? Like you no longer can win the race because you've had some help.
Correct.
Okay.
And but there is a feeling of I'm less than now. A little bit. Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah.
And how is that? Because I mean, a lot of us have, you put that less than under the category of people call it the imposter syndrome or am I
Oh,
good
yeah.
enough question?
Yeah.
And yet you're out there doing something that 99.999% of people on the planet can't do, won't do, would never dare do. Isn't that interesting?
No, people don't give themselves enough credit.
Yeah, but I'm sitting here telling you I wouldn't do it. But so you're sitting there, and so all of a sudden you're like, oh damn, we've been like bumped back. Is that what happens? Or
We weren't there yet. It wasn't until the end of the next day. No, the following day. It's hard to keep it. I need to write a timeline. That we were in fact put into adventure category. Yeah. But that was the first step that led us to probably being put into it.
Because that slowed you were slowed down. And then the next day when you left, so I'm picturing that you're kind of between a rock and a hard place. You've got this thick forest, you've got the like cliff you don't want to go back to.
Yeah. So it's like cliff.
And so you're like between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
Like this is the definition.
Literally.
How did like the next morning, how did you get out? Did you go through the forest? What did you do to carry
Yeah,
on?
so we ended up having a great night with these guys. It was so much fun. The next day happened to be Wendy's birthday, and I had brought a candle. The candle made weight, and we all sang her happy birthday. And the three of us, Kayla and Wendy and I, were having really deep discussions about are we living the life that we want to be? And that was beautiful. And so what was hilarious is that we saddled up next morning, headed out, said bye to the guys. So they typically stay back and let us sort our way. And we're on the trail, all happy, smiling, laughing, because we were generally that way. And they're like this. They can't tell us which way to go, but they're pointing their
Oh.
fingers to go the other way.
So did the gaucho and those guys camped near you that morning?
Yeah, we were all
Okay.
together. Yeah.
Okay. And so they kind of were like, no, they were like, warmer, colder.
Yes, they didn't say anything verbally. They just kind of raised their eyebrows and pointed the other way. So we're like,
Yeah.
Lord.
Oh man, we would have
Then
gone the wrong way.
we had a great ride down this lovely grassy slope. Horses were fresh, so we were not fresh, fresh, but they were awake. So at least we were able to trot a bit, a little bit of cantering. And then we hit a couple gates, but did okay. We each took turns. There was one that took us a little while. You ride up and down and up and down and up and down looking for the gate. So that's a lot of time. All of us
Yeah.
done. All the riders
That's what
done.
I've heard. And I remember I heard Kansas talking on she did a couple of posts gaucho things, and she was talking about one day feeling really bad because she had said, I think if we go this way, and it was the opposite way of what they should have gone. And she just said she felt so bad because she made the call, but it was a 50-50 shot.
We all did that. Each of us, I think, made calls like that. And you do feel bad, but it's so hard to know.
And isn't that life?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that like, do I take the job or not take the job? Do we move or not move? Do we buy this house or not this house? Do we have a kid or not? Like, I mean, there's so many decisions you're making like that. And then how do you learn to live with them? I think it's such a metaphor for life, what you did.
It really is. So this was a hilarious day too. So the three guys we were riding on, but then we were walking, horses got tired again, and they were coming up on us like a posse. It was hilarious. And they saw that we saw them, so they'd like duck down under a hill.
Wait, are these other competitors?
The gaucho, Nico, Faku, and
Oh,
Philip.
I got you. Okay.
Yeah, so they were riding in the same direction.
Yeah.
We're riding
Yeah.
on the same course.
Yeah.
And we were cracking up. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
So we're doing fine. We get through a gate. Kayla had gotten off her horse to undo it. Gate was fine. She got back on. And these horses spin.
Yeah, that's what I understand. You have to know how to get on a horse that's not standing still.
And we'd all try to help hold them or box them in as much as possible with our horses. But you're also getting on, with a heap of
Pack.
gear.
Yeah, you got to swing. You're not swinging your leg over the back of a saddle. You're swinging it over a giant pack.
No, and you're wearing layers and layers of clothing.
Right. So you're not agile.
No. No. So she got on, her horse spun, she came off the right side, hit her wrist and head pretty hard. And
Oh.
Kayla's amazing. She's just an amazing young woman. She actually has done adventure medical training, so she knew something wasn't right. So first thing they said, if anything happens, let the medics know, communicate. Things go
Yep.
down fast out there.
Yeah.
There's no prompt care. There's no kitchen. There's no CVS. So
Right. And you're not, like, we are somewhat conditioned, I think, to minimize, to gut
yes.
our way through, to think things are going to get better. And that's exactly the opposite of what you need to do when life and death is at stake.
Yes, absolutely. So we called the medics, and obviously they were right behind us.
Hiding behind a hill.
So I galloped back and said, "Hey, we really do need your help this time." And Toby evaluated Kayla and said, "I think you look fine. Why don't you guys just walk in?" So the next stop we had was the next horse station. So that would have been
Yeah.
horse station three. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So this
So
is still really early because from what I remember, there were a total of like 19 stations, the
19
19th being the
stations.
finish line.
And some horse
But
stations
you
and
had that. So you're at three. So you have many more stations yet to
some
go.
more. Yeah, we were right at the beginning. And so that, we weren't going to leave her. We're sticking together.
No.
She'll say,
Yeah.
"Go ahead," and we're like, "Heck no, we're with you." So we walked, and then she felt a little better. And there were some lovely grassy places that we had some nice galloping, just beautiful. Still posse on our tail, which was hilarious. And the distance was deceiving there. You think, okay, this isn't going to take us that long. And in fact, it takes hours to cover the ground
Wow.
that you need to cover. So.
Wow. And I'm getting this picture of how fun it is occasionally to get to just gallop along.
Yes. Yes.
How did the horses feel when you were galloping? I mean, were they, I'm guessing they
Fabulous.
were rock steady.
I got really lucky. Nobody pulled. I was so fortunate with my horses. I did have two really slowpoke snail horses, but nobody spun. Nobody tried to toss me. They taught me. I had two amazing teachers, my first and last horse. And then I had just the funnest guy in the middle with the next horse that I was going to get on. He was number 333, which I thought was really cool.
That's a good number.
Yeah, and he was just a blast. Forward,
So
but comfortable.
when you say the horses taught me, tell me about what you learned as you were working with the different horses. What did they teach you?
Yeah. So one of my concerns, and I'd done a training at Stevie's in
Yeah.
November, And one of my concerns, and I talked to her about it, is I'm nervous of galloping, like balls to the wall galloping. The past few years, or well, past few decades, I've been a dressage rider, ridden lots of different ways in my life, but dressage, not a ton of galloping, right? And
That's right.
so I was quite nervous of that. And so my first horse, day one, we're getting on, and I mentioned this in the radio program, but he happened to be the scout horse, and Kansas told me this. So we get on, and I'm thinking, I'm just going to stay back, kind of in the back, not really push anything. So I get on, and he's just going. Not, he didn't bolt at all,
No, but he
just
wanted to go.
steady. Yeah, and he was just like this
Well, and
solid
I
tank.
saw video of this. So we have to paint a picture for people listening.
Yeah.
Because, when you go to like a golf tournament, or in my case, I go to water ski tournaments, they have these flags, these big like flags, which y'all had to go through, I
Yes.
think.
Yes.
Lapping flags, which that's just a whole nother thing with horses. I was riding horses out the other day and had to pass, it was windy and we had to pass some of those. And believe me, all the horses, none of them got it freaked out, but all of them were like, "Do you see that?" So they notice it. And you get like, it's like picturing almost like a Western like movie that you might have seen, where you've got 40 horses galloping through these flags off into the wilderness. So that's what you're in the middle of. You were one of those people I was watching. I just didn't know which one.
So I ended up going in the lead, which just
Oh my
completely blew
gosh.
my mind, because that was the last place I expected to find myself. And there was no stopping him. I mean, they really said, just give them their head. Don't try to
Yeah.
hold them, because that's when the problems start.
Well, and
Just.
that's the thing about galloping that bothers me a little bit is like, okay, I'm fine if you'll go as long as you'll stop. But it sounds to me like you actually had to go and just be willing to go.
Just be willing to go. Lots of breath work, lots of calming my body, looking up. And I said this on the radio program too, because you look down and
Oh, look down, fall
you want
down.
to steer over the crazy mounds of spiky things. So I just looked up. We did have a our hobbles, so we had hobbles, and we had them tied in the front on some D-rings, so you kind of hold on to that. So that was a
When you're galloping.
steady. And pretty
It's like a
loose.
night latch almost, or whatever they call that. I don't know if that's the
So
right term, but
pretty, I didn't have a hard contact. I had contact, but I just settled into my legs, looked up, and thought, holy crap, I'm at the front of the Gaucho Derby on day one. And this horse is teaching me to trust myself I can ride a gallop and enjoy it.
That's the best part. Like, he was teaching you to trust yourself, to trust him. And that's my, this
I
is the
got
thing
you.
about trust to me that is the biggest distinction. Is a lot of times we worry about trusting someone else, something else. And the question really is, do I trust myself to handle myself through whatever's happening here? And that's the work I want to do on myself, is how to trust myself. Because the other way is an outside in way of living. This is an inside out way of living.
So he showed me I could do this. I just settled into my body. I've been training, and I trusted the training that I had done,
And did Stevie take you out to gallop to get
We did
ready?
a little bit. We didn't do as much. I didn't do her actual galloping clinic. But
I
she
just did that one, by the way.
oh, I want to do that.
Yeah,
I
that's
really want
great.
to do that. We talked a lot, and she's like, you're good. Just relax, breathe, look up. Oh, she's amazing.
No, she, I did her cl galloping clinic with three other women just a month ago. And I did. I actually galloped and actually learned that I was the most balanced at the gallop.
Oh,
Not
cool.
that I wasn't a little afraid, might have wet
Yeah,
my
yeah.
pants a little bit,
Yeah.
but because
Okay to be afraid. Yeah, it's
that's
okay to be afraid.
fast, right?
Yeah.
Like, and we were doing short stints. We weren't doing, there was no place for us to do like long extended gallops. We
Okay.
were out in the lava trails with the nice
Oh,
sandy footing, but not any good long. But what turned out is the extended trotting was what was actually requiring more balance. Because that just throws you out of balance almost every step. And it's like a constant recalibration. With a gallop, you can kind of settle in and just become one with the horse. So
Yeah, so
yeah,
that was wonderful.
I'm so impressed. I think that's so awesome. So you were out first with your scout horse, going, "Oh my gosh, I'm leading the Derby." And
Yeah,
when it,
and I think,
go ahead.
so I'm thinking, I don't know where I'm going. I'm just following these people because who was at the front? Kansas, Warwick, Dan, Scott, Morgan, a bunch of other people who were really dialed in into what was
Yeah.
going on, or they seemed it to me at least. They were super impressive. And so I'm like, I'm just gonna kind of follow them. And Kansas said, look, that horse goes and searches for the wild horses. So he's just gonna do what he's gonna do.
Yeah.
So then they veered off and I veered off with them. And then I ended up with another woman, Josephine, who's fantastic. And then, some gates happened and
Yeah. And in the meantime, you're having to like get back up with Wendy and make sure that
she
the
was,
two of you stay together as the excitement starts and people start splitting off into their different groups.
Right. And she was way behind me. And I wasn't really worried because we knew that this could happen and I knew we'd catch up. Did so.
Yeah. So tell me, like, especially the first night, you've finished writing, the writing hours are over, and it's time to set up your camp. Had you practiced? Was it no big deal when it was time to like figure out where to put my tent, how to hobble the horses, how to make sure the horses don't go too far? You know, all those questions that, you know, now it's time to settle in for the evening. Tell me a little bit about that process.
Yeah, so the practicing is good, but it's really not real world because the winds out there are so epic. We just helped each other. Wendy and I would, we'd set up one tent and then we'd set up the other tent. We were fortunate that night. We were at Vet Station 2. We'd hoped to get to 3, but we were at Vet Station 2, and that was a really nice place. There was a corral. We were able to put our horses in there.
Oh, nice.
So we could sleep at night because when they were not in a corral, you needed to get up every couple hours and check on your horses.
I heard Kansas describe that because she said they could travel as much as 4 miles over the night with the hobbles. And you just don't want to have to go walk 4 miles. That's a well over an hour of walking to catch up with your horses.
Minimal.
Yeah. So
So it
did you
was a
ever have that? How far did how what's the furthest you ever had to go in the middle of the night to find your horse?
Well, we didn't have to go in the middle of the night. The Gaucho 911 night, Wendy's horse broke his lead rope and took off before we had gone to bed. Or were we just going to bed?
Mm.
That was before because it was still light. And the Gauchos, it was so exciting. They leapt bareback on their horses and chased that horse down the valley. And all the sheep are like running out of the way.
Oh my gosh. And did they lasso the horse? How did they get the horse back?
Yeah, they got him back. He had gone far though. They got him back, and then that night he again broke out, but he didn't go far. We had little lights on their halters so we could see them. So when I did my night check shift, Wendy thought he was gone, and then I did my shift, and in fact he was just further down in the woods, still hobbled, still
So
eating.
you bring.
He was happy.
Right. So you bring him back.
No, he was happy because he broke out of his lead rope. And we think that might have been part of the issue that he didn't want to
Yeah.
be tied.
Okay.
He was actually settled with the other horses. I mean, generally, horses don't want to leave the herd,
The
right?
other horses, yeah.
So he was okay.
So you didn't have to do anything about it, just know where he was. That's good. Now, if you're leading a horse with hobbles, like do you have to just walk real slow and they can, or do you take the hobbles off to bring them back? How does
We
that?
take the hobbles off.
Yeah. I've never worked with hobbles, so that's just a
I
newbie
hadn't
question
either.
there.
It was my first time.
Yeah, that's just a newbie question. Well, that so when you are thinking about your whole experience, tell me about like what were some of the high and low moments that you had?
So the Gaucho 911 night and the next day was definitely a high. Even though there were hard moments, it was hard to see Kayla come off and get hurt. She ended up being fine. The next horses we got, we had an absolute blast. I rode into that station really tired though. Never slept well, and that definitely drains me. Some people do.
I was thinking I'd never sleep well if I was out there. I mean, camping, you just don't sleep the same.
No. And you're starting to get a little drained, you're not eating a whole lot and you're burning a lot of calories. So, but the next horse, that was my 333 horse. It was a beautiful ride. The navigation went pretty smoothly. And so that was definitely a high. The next day, then we moved through forest. The next day was the day when we ended up definitely adventure category. And so day six we spent in the truck, and that was a low. That night was rough. I was pretty down.
So what, tell me about, if you will, if you don't have to, but tell me about what led up to you having to be in the truck and what was that all about? Because
Yeah,
I could
so
feel, I
we,
could see that that would be disappointing if you were expecting to
yeah.
ride the whole thing.
Yeah, so we rode into, is it Horse Station? I lose track. Four, right before the Mesete, which you, if you talk to Kansas and Warwick, they talked about the Mesete,
Which is the
the
plateau
plateau
of
of death.
death.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were thinking, oh man, we really don't want to do that. That sounds awful. When in fact we didn't do it. So we rode into that horse station right before the Mesete. And Holly, one of the organizers, said, okay, here's the deal, you guys. You can ride the Mesete. You're in adventure class now. There's no way you can finish on horseback. You can ride the Mesete tomorrow. Get up at 7 or be on your horse at 7. It's a 12-hour ride. There's no medics. There's one vet check in between, and it's a rough go. And she said you have to finish it in that day, and you'll still be in adventure class at the end.
Or you can get in a truck
Right. And go
and
forward.
leapfrog.
Yes.
I can tell you right now, I know myself. I know exactly what I would have done. I'd have been in the truck with you.
Yeah.
Try not to be car sick, but I'd have been in the
Yeah.
truck.
And so at that point, all of us agreed. Yeah, no. If we had a chance to still be in competitor class, then we might have done it. But because we go through that and then we're still on adventure class, and we know ourselves by now. Now we're seeing, okay, what are the missed calls we're making. I don't want to call them mistakes because we all made navigational errors, I guess. It's even the people who were really dialed into navigation, dialed in, it's just that hard.
That's part of the game. They set it. I mean, they don't
Yeah.
set it up, but they've chose to put the race in a place where it's just not straightforward.
Right. So yeah, we got in the truck and we thought it'd be 6 hours and it was, I don't know, 10. But before we got, we ended up having coffee. So we're in the middle of nowhere. And there's a lot of European settlers. So I mean they're all Argentinian now, but we ended up having coffee in this lady's home. They're there for the summers, and she owns, I don't know how many tens of thousands of hectares of Patagonia and have been there for generations. And she invites us in for coffee. Doesn't speak English, but our whole group is there, and it was such an amazing experience to be in her home.
How
So,
lovely.
yeah. So, okay. So we were in adventure class, but we also had these other really amazing moments that are part of my experience.
Yeah,
Important.
I mean, yeah, those are magical. How many people were in there?
Guys, there were probably 10 of us.
Wow, that's a
Yeah.
lot of people to have into your home.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So the truck takes you across the, so you don't have to ride the Mesete, which I
Right.
saw some video that Warwick and
Yes.
Kansas had of that, and it just looked excruciating.
Yes. And they all said it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
And you're
in my mind, I signed up to do the hard thing, and that was one of the
one of
hardest
the hard
parts.
things.
So I was disappointed in myself and not, there was no blame. It was just what could have I chose differently to perhaps had a different outcome?
Yeah.
And
Do
at
you,
that point, it
are
was
you
kind
still
of,
thinking about that now? Are you, is there any part of you that's like, okay, now I want to go back and do the whole thing over again?
possibly if somebody would fund it.
Yeah, because
Yeah.
it's not cheap.
No, it's, yeah. A lot with all your
There's
gear and
an
travel.
entry fee, and then there's all the things you have to spend to get ready and so forth.
Right. No,
Yeah.
it's significant. I was beating up on myself for a little bit for a while, and then I just stepped back and thought, and put it in more of a metaphor context. Okay, so I made this decision there. How is that reflecting on the rest of my life and not being so hard on myself for making certain decisions?
You know that I've been working on that myself for a long time, because actually, to some degree, I think we are taught to beat ourselves up. I don't think
Oh,
it's
yeah.
something we do naturally.
Right.
I think a lot of our conditioning says this is we're going to beat you up, or we're going to teach you to beat yourself up. One of my most profound moments of getting that this is true, even in the highest level of sport, was reading Andre Agassi's book Open.
Okay.
And here's the big headline for anybody that doesn't know this about him. He didn't love tennis, but his dad did. And so he was living his life through Andre and was quite full of a temper and so forth. And so beat his son up a lot.
No.
So Andre Agassi tells about a moment on the court where he is furious with himself for missing a shot. And he said, I realized I no longer needed my dad to do this to me. I could now do it to myself.
Oh man, yeah.
And one of the ways that I've been finding my way out of doing that to myself, and I mean, it's finding my way out, not found my way out for sure, but is to actually acknowledge that I've got two parts of everything, the part that I have done, the part I haven't done. And I can focus on one or the other. I can choose what to focus on. And if I choose to claim my progress and say, look how far I've come, then I don't lose my progress. But what I found is if I focus on what I don't have, not only do I not have it, I lose the progress I've already made as well. So it's a tough one because it feels like it's the right thing. I think we do it because we're trying to be better.
I mean, it's complex, and it's tied in that to not enoughness, you know, and how much do we need to feel enough when we are as exactly as we are, completely complete and enough, and we're not broken.
What if we could just live that way, right? What if we could just buy that?
But it's generational. It, you know, that we're raised a certain way, and I, you know, I'm sure I made all kinds of mistakes with my kids, but I really, not a trophy, you know, I don't like give them trophies for anything, but I really try to celebrate all that they do and who they are.
You know, that I was having this conversation this morning about, like, not this is an animal training, especially around my dog. But something I have actually learned is that there is a place for me to praise her. But when she does something exceptionally good, if I will let her feel it for herself rather than make it about me, it actually, like, that builds her mental tools and her mindset so much better because she gets to have her own endorphin kick from having done it well and having done something difficult. And that takes a lot of restraint on my part because I'm over here going, yay. And there's a part of me is like, look what I taught her to do, as opposed to letting her experience, look what you learned to do. So I think this is the beautiful thing about putting ourselves in difficult things like you did with the gaucho, is look at all the things you did for yourself.
Leading up to it, I mean, I'd signed up, you know, a year and a half prior to the race, so there's a lot of things going on to get ready.
And getting ready, what were some of the top things you had to do? I know you went to train with Stevie, but like inside of yourself, possibly things that would fit in the unseen world that you worked on, or you know, I know D Dan talked a lot about having to actually lose weight to
So
not have a problem.
I tried to gain weight. I'm quite small, quite petite, and actually I think was the lightest rider. So I started a plan. Well, I wanted to train harder for more of the year, and then ran into actual burnout. Sorted myself out from that and got with a trainer. 200 grams of protein a day, 7 meals a day, pretty intense training program, which I respond well. I've got some good genetics there that I can build muscle pretty quickly. Did a lot of rucking, which helped. I like that. And so that was, I wanted to feel physically strong. That was one of my main goals.
That seems like it's an essential piece because I just know for myself, like when I was trying to learn how to do rock climbing, there was like a before and an after. And as I've worked on my mental tools, I've gotten over to some degree the debilitating fear of heights that I had. But also, what I discovered is when I started water skiing, I got very strong. And me trying to learn to rock climb when I wasn't strong, I had fear and lack of strength. And then when I was learning afterwards, I had somewhat less fear, but I also had strength and I could count on my body. So, yeah, I think being able to really like rucking sounds difficult to me.
It suits me. I loved it. I mean, it's hard. It's hard. And I did it, and we had some huge snowstorms and ice. And, I just put my head down and I used those moments on the race because there were times, and I measured places on my farm. Okay, this is 2 miles. This is this. And so there were times on the race I thought, okay, so this is essentially like riding to the back of my property and back to my house. So I was able to break it down, pace myself again with a distance I had trained, and then just do it over and over and over.
But that's our mind. If our mind knows it can do it, as opposed to it's impossible, it totally changes how you do it. Good for you. Now, I can't, because I work with people with burnout, I have to go back and say you ran into actual burnout. Tell me about that if you will. If you're willing, I want to hear not only how you knew you were burned out, what you did to burn out, but how you got yourself out of it. That's the
And I think it's really important to talk about it because we're in this society, many of us are, that you have to do more, you have to accomplish more. And not even just to purchase things, but to say, I am doing all of this. So somehow I'm a better human, or I don't know. It's crazy.
busyness as enoughness. It's the back, it's like literally, okay, I may not be enough, but I'm damn sure busy. So watch this. I can outwork anyone.
And also for me, it's tapped in a lot of into personal fears of survival. So condensed version, divorced now 4 years, was very comfortable way of living, but it wasn't healthy. It was quite toxic. I'm grateful for all of it now. It's good. Kids are good. He's good. I'm great. But it was rough, and I think that's probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my life is leaving that. Derby's close. So I had a son home for a while. He finally left, and so this last year was when I really dug into my building my business hard. Really trying to seek ways to support myself financially. So that was a big motivation. And I also really, I like what I do. So I got into all these programs, spent all this money doing all these projects, webinars and this and that, and training, riding polo horses. I also had the fortunate to be in the first sort of real relationship, after my divorce. So that was another commitment. So I was taking all these things, lots of great things. And I play in a
But
band, and I was developing my drumming too.
so you're a drummer. Oh, very cool. Oh yeah, I knew I saw that in your bio. You that's amazing. 'Cause that's of all the things people do in a band, there's usually less women drummers, so that makes you even double cool.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So then I started to feel dizzy, and I'm like, maybe I just need to sleep more. Sleep wasn't good. Just having these feelings of like something's gonna happen. And I'm in healthcare. I'm a nutritionist. I'm an epigenetic coach. So I know better, right? So I finally had some testing done. This was probably September. And there were times I couldn't get off the couch. I could not function. I had to reschedule clients. Sorry, clients. I ended up seeing them. They're all good. Canceling different things. And I had emailed the Derby organizers and said, I don't think I can do the race this way. Can I defer? So that was September, late September. And they said, you can't.
Wow.
So I finally did some testing, saw that many of my hormone levels were essentially nil, even more than normal at where I'm at in life. And I worked with a couple amazing practitioners, good friends of mine, fellow functional medicine docs, not doc, but and I replaced hormones and rested and refueled and cut back where I could, and got my strength back enough to start training
Yeah.
and saw that I could.
Yeah. Hormones, I mean, I'm not an epigenetic coach and you are, but boy, do they sit at the base of so much of our health.
Massive, massive. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was clinical burnout. I mean, it said it on the test. Your HPA axis is shot. And
Yep.
the way to treat that is to do nothing for 6 to 12 months.
Is that right? They actually want you to not do anything.
Do very little. Nothing to
Interesting.
really increase adrenaline, because I'm not going to call it adrenal burnout, but you do run through
Yeah.
your
Your stores.
neurotransmitters. Yeah. So yeah, do nothing, maybe light walking for 6 to 12 months.
And you're like, well, okay, so what's option B? Because I am going to the Gaucho Derby because they won't defer me. So I'm going to be racing across Patagonia.
Yeah. So more pacing myself, and then my mom had health issues. That was super stressful. I had to go see her in Michigan. And I kept going back to, this is all training for the race.
Yeah.
I'm going to run into things that I have no idea how to deal with. But all these things that I'm still comfortable in my home, it's cozy, I can still sort of practice here in a comfortable way. So I just tried to put it all in context of race training.
See, I think that's brilliant because if you had chosen to treat it all as impediments to the end goal, you would have been angry and beating yourself up and beating other people up and all of that. But instead, you said, well, I'm just going to use all these obstacles to get me ready for the race.
And I want to shout out to some of my clients, because in helping them, they help me. And seeing their success is heartwarming, and knowing that I'm on doing onto something.
Yeah.
And so that was very encouraging and really lovely. They probably have no idea their contribution, but I'm very grateful for them.
Well, oh, so I want to call out something that's been a theme of this conversation as well, because this is especially coming from a coach where I think it's easy for us to think we're supposed to have the answers. And what I have heard throughout this conversation is that you are learning from the horses you work with, the other people you're riding with, your clients. Like, there's a huge distinction between thinking that you have to have the answers and learning how to trust yourself to get answers from all the people you can learn from and the animals. So, can I just call that out? Because I think that to me, that validates you as a coach more than having answers. So,
Thank you.
well, you're very welcome because I just wanted to be sure it was clear. And I want to also put a bookmark in asking you what is an epigenetic coach here in a minute, because you talked about that. But I don't want to lose sight of this race. Let's kind of talk about, tell me about you did the 12 hours across, you're back to riding again. Tell me how things shook out for you as the race continued. And I'm using the term race very loosely, because you're not racing anybody, right? You're not trying to win.
No, at this point, no. I just want to enjoy myself, learn, see the view. Have fun with Wendy and everybody else. And oh, the next day was brutal. Day 7, Valentine's Day. Absolutely brutal. I didn't sleep at all. Already grumpy from the car ride and just,
Yeah.
I
Because
don't
let's be
know.
clear, a 10-hour car ride is not fun.
No, not when you're supposed to be on a horse.
Well, and even if you're not supposed to be on a horse, just think about, and I bet you were not on like an interstate. I'm guessing it was not great roads.
No, usually like washboard roads for most of it.
Yeah. So that will wear on you. I mean,
And we're
just 30
all
minutes on
unhappy.
a road like that will really wear on you. So let's just be clear. You were 10 hours in a car that wasn't comfortable.
No, and we were in it. That truck we had, Mary, amazing. She should be on your podcast. Wendy, myself, and Kayla, great women, but none of us were thrilled. We were relieved in some ways, but I know all of us were like, this is not the outcome we were
Yeah.
hoping. So we were cheery and kind of dozing, talking, and nobody was like down and depressed, but there was the energy, collectively. So next day, didn't sleep well, got on a horse. By that point, once you're in adventure category, you don't have to go and catch your horse in the beginning. And so they did help us. I ended up with, I think it was 333's brother. It was
Oh, how
222.
funny.
Looked the same. Looked like a looked like a sibling. Except he was another snail, sweetheart, but snail.
Yeah.
And so we. It was funny because they said, okay, just get on the road, just follow the road. That was such a lie. There might have been a road for the while, for a while, but the road always ended. And somebody made a navigational call. We wanted to cross this dry riverbed. It turned out to be just total mud, impassable. We ended up backtracking back into the wind towards that horse station, probably 3 hours.
Oh.
The wind was so brutal, I thought my eardrums were going to explode. And it felt like, the cartoons where the background just is the same cactus and rock and cloud? That's what it was like for hours. That's all we saw. And we hooked up with Elliot and some other people, and that was fun. We did get some trotting in. There was some okay roads. Once we backtracked, got over the river, moved forward. But it was just the ugliest part of the race. And I thought, I paid how much for this?
Because I'm seeing the ugliest stuff over and over again that I've ever
And like,
seen.
why would they make us ride through this? And I got into
Yeah.
kind of a baby mood and just grumpy. And
Well,
my
I'm
horse.
glad to hear you're human like the rest of us, because I'm
Oh,
sure you're not the only one that thought that.
no, no, I was being. I wasn't talking to anybody because my horse was so far behind. That was the other thing.
Yeah.
It's like, meh, they're leaving me.
Yeah, I
Where
got
they
the snail
were.
horse. How, yeah.
Which is silly. But I did see a top of a probably old volcano, and it was half of a crater. And that was really cool. And I kept looking at that. But at one point, I had this deep sense that epigenetic healing or some kind of healing was going to occur that day. Didn't know how. And you just put your head down and walk on. And navigation at that point wasn't too bad. It was just ugly and
Yeah,
long,
just
long
an
that
ugly,
day.
long, have to take it one step at a time, patience,
That day
slogging
lasted
through.
forever. It was hot, cold, and windy all at the same time, which is hard to explain.
Well, and so that's the, you mentioned that you were covered with clothes, because I know there were chances it could be super cold. But also it looked like at times it was warm. And that's actually a big problem for me. I still heat up like a woman in, menopause. I'm way past menopause, but I still like carry my own personal summer with me. So I actually fear being hot more than I fear being cold. So did you have to strip layers off? How did you, what got
You
out?
do. You do. And but you never know how, you don't want to take off too much because then there's the wind,
Yeah.
and which can dehydrate you, which I think all these little things ended up to why I ended up with heat exhaustion. Now looking back, especially plus the burnout, I don't think my body had fully recovered.
Right.
I'm trying
No, I
to.
was thinking if you went in and it was a 6 to 12 months and it's in September and you did this in February, you were not through the burnout recovery, then you're using lots of calories under a stressful environment. eating less than you're using in a dry area where you have to, it's probably hard to get water. Like, how did you get your water, by the way? Because you can't carry that much weight. Water's
No,
heavy.
so we used a camelback, so a water bladder,
Okay.
and it was a 2 liter, and we'd fill up as often as we could,
At
streams.
a stream, and then you had filters and stuff to
Yes,
keep
we had
it.
drops. We'd use
Yeah.
drops. A lot of people
Okay.
said certain streams were fine, but there was livestock around,
Oh no,
so
I'd be using drops for
yeah,
sure.
there were dead things everywhere, everywhere.
Yeah. I'd be worried about the water. That
Yep.
did anybody get sick from water?
Well, nobody's digestion was great the whole trip, but
Oh, and that's the big question. Okay, I haven't asked this question, but I must. How hard was it to have to go to the bathroom out there? And I'm not talking about the easy stuff. I'm talking about the
just
hard.
do it. You just do it.
You just go find a place and go.
Yep. You just do it. I mean, what else are you going to do? You can't haul a porta potty with you.
No, I'm just thinking, I really like my toilet paper, and I'm doubting that y'all had the ability to carry much toilet paper with you. So.
Yeah, little bits. We did have wipes. So Stevie recommended dehydrating, like those little facial wipes.
Oh, got
So I
it.
had packs of those, for my face and certain parts where I
Other
wanted to
body. Yeah.
clean every
Yeah.
day. And then that was your toilet paper.
Okay, well, there you go. See, it's so simple. I mean, of course Stevie had the answers because she's done
Yeah,
this.
I know,
But
because she's Stevie.
those are the silly little questions that I carry with me, is like, okay, if I'm out there, how do I do this?
Yeah. Well, it was funny because Wendy and I spent a week in Montana in the summer to sort of train. And that was in the issue with that are bears. You know, when you
Yeah.
go to the
Oh
bathroom,
yeah.
the bears, and there were no bears here. So that was kind of a that was a
That
relief.
was a relief, I'm sure. 'Cause yeah, in Montana, and they're not the black bears that I have out my door. Those are grizzlies in Montana. I've been there. You don't want to mess with grizzlies. They're like the crocodile of the alligator world. You
So
don't want
that
to
was
mess
a
with
much
them.
scarier bathroom experience in Montana.
Yeah, I would think so. Wow. Okay. Well, that question that I've been dying for. So you said you ended up with heat exhaustion. Tell me about how that, what happened at the end. So how far did you go and what happened then?
So I want to talk about that horse because you'll love this. So we ride finally into the last horse station, nine. On day eight. And so this is where I'd let go of snail number two, sweetie snail. And then we drop all of our gear off, and then we went walked across the street to the estancia where we camp. And I happened to go through this corral, and this adorable little buckskin, he looked like a mini Lusitano, just bumped his forehead into my shoulder gently. Like he said, hi. I'm like, well, aren't you cute? And I took note of his halter number, 392. I'm like, maybe I get to ride you. And I'm comfortable riding large horses, but he was smaller. Like my first horse was little. He was a little tank. He was awesome. And this guy was, maybe he was 15 hands, if that. Just beautiful, very kind eye. Just emanating love.
Oh,
Yeah. And Wendy saw it.
yeah.
She saw the connection, which was even more special. So it wasn't like I just
Yep.
imagined. So we go and camp, have a good night. That was actually a really fun night. I got to sing with Kansas. And
That would be magical. That's one of my dreams, is to be sitting around a campfire singing with Kansas someday.
We're actually in talks of maybe having her come to my farm this summer, but
Nice.
yeah, to do a clinic. Anyway, so good night, wake up, go. I feel good. I slept well, ate well. Doing music always makes me energized. And then you go and you to get your horse, you pick a number out of a bag.
Okay.
So Polly, the race organizer, so I pick a number and we go over to the corral and she's like, no, I'm not putting you on him. I didn't even know which one it was. So then I pick another number and it happened to be the biggest, like monster looking horse, like a monster
Wow.
version of a horse. And
Wow.
I just said, Holly, I'm adventure category. It's the end of the race. Can I pick someone else? She's like, sure. So I look at the bag and 392 is facing out.
Oh,
So I'm like, I'm just gonna pick that one. She's like, there you go. Because I had asked her, can I ride this?
I
She's
love
like, no, you got to go through the regular way. Well, it turned out my way anyway. So,
It turned, the number showed itself to you, so you got to have the little buckskin.
So kind of numerology in here. I had some
That is so awesome. You know, Kansas mentioned something that she had done as a practice before she went, which was that sort of heart breathing, which we did before we started this podcast together. And I've made it a practice. I've been working with it for years, but since working with Kansas, I've even like really amped it up. And she talked about sending energy to the horses before she even knew them.
That we talked about that there. And I tried to send positive energy when I chose my horse, and I did a lot of visualization before the race.
I will say that that has I've in the few times that I've been working in different environments, because I don't have my own horses. I ride everybody else's horses. So like I just was up at Stevie's and went to the galloping workshop. Well, I did that with them before I went. I didn't even know who I was sending it to, but there was a knowing with them that I had, because it's almost like, well, yeah, they hadn't met me before, but they had met me, you know, because I had been doing that. So that's it. And to some degree, probably you had practiced, you know, you and the buckskin had somehow connected maybe before.
Yeah, I think we had. So I got on him. He's a little frisky, but nothing naughty. No spinners. I had no spinners. Thank you.
Luckily for you, because there was like on Warwick's podcast, there was a lot of talk about, you know, he talked a lot about his concern for safety, with the horses that were moving. And Kansas mentioned it as well and mentioned safety. And, you know, Kansas can address it in a way that most of us can't. She's a trick rider,
Oh, brilliant.
extraordinary balance. So she just had lots of ways. She's not afraid of riding out of balance. Whereas somebody like me that's a beginner, getting on a spinning horse would be a really huge challenge for me, especially if it was a tall one. I'm tall, but you know.
No, I didn't want the spinners, and I didn't get a spinner. I
Good for you.
visualized all calm horses. So maybe I manifested the snails. I don't know.
Possibly so. I mean, I mean, you actually visualized ahead of time and then things
Calm.
matched up.
I visualized calm horses.
And tell me about your visualizations. Were you self-guided? Did you have guided visualizations? What's your method for
So
visualization?
when I was working out, I was visualizing the race. I was visualizing riding, galloping. Wasn't visualizing camping so much, but I visualized Wendy and I riding across the finish line, galloping, holding hands, which didn't happen. However, there was another part that we did gallop holding hands.
That's incredible.
Oh, so special. Laughing. We laugh at almost everything. So it was just absolute pure joy. Middle of nowhere, Patagonia, galloping on fabulous horses in this grass. And there was a herd of wild horses in front of us. I mean, come on.
I mean, is that not worth the price of admission right there? Like that moment is, you know, it's like it had to be in just magical.
Yeah, it really was.
That's amazing.
So day nine, get on this great horse, riding out with an amazing group of women. Wendy, there were two Wendys. I don't want to say the other Wendy. There were just two women, amazing women named Wendy, Kayla, Stephanie, and Emily, and myself. Just a few legs to go. We could taste the end. Beautiful day. It was warm, but it's hot where I live in the summer, and it didn't occur to me, oh, this is a hot day. So we're going, having a good ride. Emily had suffered from heat exhaustion a couple of days before, so she started to not feel good. So we were pacing ourselves, doing nice, but some really nice places for gallops with Mount Fitzroy in the background, just insane. And we all noted that. At one point, we were in a gully, and my horse was so smart. He knew the way to go. You could see him. He would turn and say, no, and no, this way. So we had to jump up probably 10 foot out of this gully, almost straight up. And the girls were behind me, and they said, oh my God, that looked like something from the man from Snowy River. And they said he leapt up and you just stayed right with him. And it was a blast, and I fully trusted him. I've never done that. So then we ride into the vet station. Everybody's fine, but we're waiting for the medic for Emily because she's not okay and she's not sure if she should go on. I'm doing fine, got my water, had a snack, sat down, and suddenly it felt like I just disconnected from my brain. It's hard to
Wow.
explain. I didn't feel sick. I wasn't nauseated. I was tired, but not like passing out. And so Wendy, not my friend Wendy, but Wendy, she saw what she had seen in Emily, saw that I was going down. And in a couple minutes, I was uncontrollably shaking on the ground.
Wow.
It was like what it was like I was having an out-of-body experience. Like, what just happened? I have no idea what's going on. My horse is standing over me with his head, like his nose near my face. Like,
This
what
is 392. Oh.
No, we were deeply connected. It was amazing. So Wendy's getting my shirt wet, putting it on me. I'm uncontrollably shaking. And finally the medics come, give me some electrolytes. My heart rate wasn't even that high. I think it was 99. No fever. And then my friend Wendy touched my skin and she quickly drew her hand back and she said, "Lori, you're on fire."
Wow.
And that's when I knew, okay, so something's not right here. And Toby, the medic, said, "We can't let you ride on."
Yeah.
And I just burst into tears.
Oh, and you still feel it. Yeah, because your soul wanted to finish, but your body said no.
Yeah, and Wendy, we wanted to do it together.
Yeah.
And I told her to go on, and we had discussed, the variations of what might happen, where one would go on, and this was clearly one that she needed to ride on, and it was, yeah, to come that far. And then, yeah, I sure did go into beating up on myself.
Well, I can imagine you're like, I could have did what could have, would have, should have. And yet, probably it could have been no other way.
And it's only taken, some weeks stepping back and looking at the big picture of what could have contributed to that,
Yeah.
which
And
I'm
what
trying to take stock of.
and you're still taking stock, and I don't want to interrupt or interfere with what it is that you need to settle into there. But if someone is listening and has had this kind of disappointment and maybe still struggling and beating themselves up, what kind of guidance might you have for someone that hasn't completed a big goal and yet there's so many lessons that you've harvested as well? What would you say to
Pace
them?
yourself. Pace yourself. I know it sounds really, really simple, and it's so hard for us to pace ourselves because we want to have the thing already done.
Well, that's another piece of our conditioning, isn't it? Let's just get through to the end and not wreck it. I think about the greatest coaches, and they talk about the process, and they don't even think about like we're trying to win the national championship of whatever, whatever. It's like we're just going to go every day and show up for practice and do this thing. And maybe one of the biggest life-changing things for me in the last few years as I've gotten on this horse journey is I think of it as frame by frame.
Oh,
Just ride the next step.
yes, the next step. And learn to trust yourself. And I know it's through doing hard things that that trust comes. And I've really,
Only through doing hard things.
right. And I wanted to circle back on Valentine's Day and my
Yeah.
ex-husband because I got to the end. So we were in a truck there and got to the end, and we had no phone service there, which was fabulous. No cell service. And then the next day, there was some Wi-Fi, so my phone had a little bit, and I happened to bump my message tab. I wasn't wanting to see anything, but it turned out that he had sent me a text on that day and said, "Thank you for all that you've done. For all the growth you've done, for all the changes you've helped us make as a family." And this was unheard of years prior that I would hear something like that from him. And so I'm like, there it is. There's that healing. And that's helping not only him, but our kids. That's the epigenetic generation.
How beautiful that he acknowledged that. Yeah.
I just burst into tears. Warwick's there. And Warwick and Candace, we were in the dome together. I'm like, oh, you guys, I just had epigenetic, I can't even say it.
Epigenetic healing.
Epigenetic healing.
So once they said you can't go on, did they just carry you to the end where everybody's meeting? Do you have to drive there again?
Yeah, so we drove. So Emily and I, they told Emily not to go on
Yeah,
either.
I knew Emily. I could tell Emily wasn't gonna make it either.
Yeah, so at least we had each other and we were both in the same spiraling, thoughts of, oh, we're
We are a
complete.
failure, except
Yes.
you're not.
Yeah. So it was only a 45-minute truck ride from there to finish camp, which is a
Oh,
fabulous place. Oh my God, I
yeah.
want to, so fun. And yeah, and then luckily there was a band and I got to bang on a drum that day, which helped.
Nice.
Yeah, and then met some other funny musician guys that weren't part of the race and hung out with them, talked about music, and that helped me settle, helped my soul settle a bit.
It's funny that you were talking about this whole what it takes to do hard things and sort of how we like. I love that you got something that's like your music to sort of fill your cup back up when you're feeling so down on yourself. I don't remember, I think it was Saturday on CBS, they had a story about a guy, and I don't remember his name, but his whole point of the generation of kids that we've raised is that we don't let them do hard things. And he did that, and I'll try to probably get a link to this in the show notes since it's coming up. But he asks parents that are kind of like, let's say 50 to 65 age range. He's in a asking questions. How old were you when your parents first let you out of the house without supervision? And I can remember actually being 3 years old and playing in the neighborhood in the front yard with my mom being in the house.
I
And
remember that.
at 5 years old, I know I went around the block in the dark on Halloween, did my own trick or treating. And I might have been with an older kid, but that was maybe a 7 year old. But I know I did those things. And he said that. And then he says, how old did you let your own child out to do those things? And he said consistently, every time he does this presentation, they say 6 o'clock, 6 years old for them and 10 to 12 years old for their kids.
Not
And
okay.
it's
Not
not
okay.
okay. And I know I was one of those helicopter parents myself, because I've actually seen parents who had the wisdom to let their kids fall down, bump their knees, be out on their own, have other parents threaten to call social services on them.
It's just so.
Right? And they're trying to rewild their children, which we all need to be rewilded, and they're called the terrible parent. So you're under this pressure. But his point was, if you want autonomous, self-directed adults, you must allow for autonomous, self-directed kids. And what I feel like is happening with things like people doing the Gaucho Derby is an opportunity for us to we do that for ourselves.
The wild is where we find our true self.
Yeah.
It's where we're meant to see ourselves. We don't have to
That
live
just.
there all the time, but the wild is the place.
That just brings me to tears, because it is.
Yeah, it is. And then
Yeah.
you can come home and be comfy, but then you go back. Where's the
Go back to
wild?
the wild. Look at you beaming. I wish we're not going to do video, but for those of you listening, Laurie is beaming when she says those words, and so am I. And that's, I actually booked myself to go back to do a 3 day camping trip with Stevie this summer
Oh, good. Yeah, I can see when I can
for
go.
this very reason, is like, I want to be back in the wild where I can find myself to see my true self again. Yeah. So that's so magnificent. So Any closing thoughts on the before we move to epigenetic coach? Any closing thoughts on because you kind of said you had an epigenetic healing right there at the end, so they're kind of both happening at the same time. But as it relates to the race, I just you may have hit it with that last statement.
Yeah, no, that was big. Well, I did ask everybody, the staff, the vets, the medics, can I just ride that beautiful horse over the finish line the next day?
Oh,
So the vet,
beautiful.
one of the vets, she rode him back through the remainder of the race, which was in fact the hardest part. The medics knew what was coming.
And actually, aren't you kind of glad you didn't do that? Because it might have been a much worse, like you might have been the helicopter person.
That's what Wendy told me. She's like, Laura, I don't think you would have made it through it, given your, physical condition. Not that all things equal, I would have, but yeah. So no, it, I might not be here. Who knows? Life is always happening for us. So they let me ride him over the finish line. I have gorgeous pictures of it. And there was a little imposter syndrome for a while, but now I just stare at those pictures and that horse, he looks like Spirit, the horse in the movie.
He does. I saw that p picture.
And he, no, we, I wish I could bring him home.
You know, I heard so many of, I heard Kansas say that about so many other horses. And you know what I heard between the lines, again, listening to her talk about it, and this has been a philosophy that's been very hard for me to grasp because of this agenda thing that we're taught. I'm supposed to have the answers. I'm supposed to train the horse. I'm supposed to know. And working with Bruce has dissuaded me of that notion completely. And his perhaps biggest mantra is let the horse tell you what to do, when to do, how to do. Be your job is to be the conduit. And what I hear from you and what I heard from Kansas is, and you have to yield a little bit to do that, but that you were willing to yield to who the horses were so that you all could work in harmony.
Well, there's so much wisdom in yielding. It's so important that we yield more, and we generally don't.
And yet, isn't that the way of nature? What does a tree do when the wind blows?
It yields.
So if we could only remember that, because we have forgotten what that looks like too. And I think, you know, I do a lot of corporate work with teams, and I remember where I was sitting in New York City. I'm in the middle of Manhattan, and somebody asked me what was the key to good teamwork. And this was an investment bank where things are a lot of sharp edges, a lot of, you know, elbow throwing and BSDs, which I won't describe, but people who know what it is, they know what that means. But I said, I believe it's the extent to which the team members can yield to each other for the sake of the common goal is the core thing to a good team. So yeah, there's a lot of wisdom in yielding.
Yeah, that makes me
It's
think of the team
beautiful.
that I'm lucky to be a part of right now. So
Yeah, and is that part of your business, this
it
epigenetic? All right, so we're going to transition to that.
is. Okay.
Because before we close, I want people to understand a little bit about who you are and what is an epigenetic coach, because I don't know. I'm making up stories based on the little breadcrumbs you've given us. So tell everybody about that.
So I'm a dietitian, studied animal science, then went back to school for human nutrition and was a dietitian for a little while, then home kids, and then, probably 5 or 6 years ago got back into it, and I learned about looking at your DNA, lifestyle DNA, it's not a medical diagnosis, to guide some decisions because everybody's guessing, right? And we have this noise. We live in a screaming space
Noise.
of supplements and exercise and foods, and it's always something new. We hold the wisdom already in our body, in our DNA. We already have it. So the test that I run, we look at that, and there's certain areas that have more research. We focus on that. We pair it with lab work, what's actually going on with your body. It's not guesswork. Talk to the client. What are your challenges? What are your goals? And then we look at the genetic propensities for what might be best for them, in terms of exercise, types of fat to eat, their sleep genetics. We have ancient clock genes, our circadian rhythm. The more we follow what they're asking for, the better our health outcomes can be. So it's looking at that and guiding them, developing a plan, and then and sticking with them through the changes. So little changes made over time.
And what kind of things are you seeing happen for your clients when you do that?
Well, one of the best compliments I recently got from a young woman, she said, there was before Lori and now there's after Lori. So she didn't necessarily have a lot of weight to lose, but we started with her sleep. And we worked on that and so much improved from there. And that's, that doesn't take looking at your DNA to do, but sometimes it does help. We made adjustments to her diet and that was it's indicated somewhat in her DNA. So it's changing how the genes express and by what we do epigenetically.
Could you define epigenetics
Yes.
for me
So
and
epi
everyone?
is everything above the genome. Genome is the DNA, our DNA within us. And then epi is everything above. So the food we eat, the air we breathe,
I
products,
see. So it's the interaction, it's
water.
the part,
Yes. Yes.
because those
And
things feed our genes, obviously.
yes, and depending on what gene variants we have, those different substances can influence the enzymatic actions to turn the genes on or off, slow them down, make them move faster, and influence the outcome, health outcomes.
Wow, that sounds powerful. It's got to be satisfying for you to get to see those kind of changes, both in yourself, because you've been through this path yourself, I see.
Yes, and that helped me move out of a very toxic situation.
And then to see what you can do for your clients.
Yeah, doing my DNA helped me get to the Derby.
One step at a time, right? You didn't have any idea when you started, but there it was. So if you were to go back, do you remember the moment when you decided to do the Derby?
I do. Well, I read the book Comfort Crisis by Michael Easter,
Oh, I
and
love that book.
brilliant. And I thought, well, what would my Mizogi be? And I remembered hearing Eric
And
Cooper.
describe what the Mizogi
Yeah, so
means.
the Mizogi is a Japanese philosophy of doing something really hard. It's 50% chance of completion and don't die. Those are the two rules
Yeah,
about it.
that's the rules.
So the thing I had done most in my life was ride horses off and on. And I'd heard about the Mongol Derby, and then I thought, meh. I looked on the website and then I saw the Gaucho Derby, and I've always wanted to ride horses in Patagonia. I don't know, just the thing. So,
So you made this decision. How long ago was it? When did you make the decision?
that would have been August of 22. So I filled out the application, pretty simple application. I thought, well, I am so out of my league here. I'm just going to take it one step at a time. There's that pacing coming in. I looked at the cost. It's like, eesh. I did see that I qualified for a loan. So I took a loan out for this. I'll be paying this for a while. It's worth it. And then I got the interview with Eric, and they asked for a video of me riding. And we had a great talk. And he said, yeah, I think you're in. I like your energy. That's what he said.
That's so cool. So what would Lori of today tell August 22nd or August of 22 Lori that made that decision?
That you're not an imposter. You're fully capable of doing this.
And you met the criteria. You didn't die.
Right? I didn't die. And I completed most of it.
Well, you had a 50% chance going in, and actually, you weren't alone. There were, wasn't it at least 50% of the people that were in the adventure category in the end?
Wasn't quite 50.
But it's
Some
close
people,
because I was looking at the list and it was pretty remarkable that.
And some people were definitely medically retired for very serious issues. Thank goodness everybody's fine. I mean, just anything could happen. And these people had trained, they were endurance riders, and I felt very underqualified. except for a lot of the mindset work I've done.
Yeah. Which I believe is some of the hardest work to do, and it's the most powerful. But I love what you said. You're not an imposter.
At
And you can do hard things.
least I know.
Look at you being, because it's true. And of course you're going to be a little sad because you did want to finish, but look what you're claiming. Yeah, it's pretty special. Do
And
you
I've
have,
go ahead.
I was going to say, do you have, what do you have as a picture for something next? Do you have a next in your mind, or are you going to continue processing this for the time being?
Still processing. I'm bringing a lot of what I learned into my coaching, which I'm very grateful for, into my life. I'm simplifying. I'm saying no to things that don't feel energetically correct. I really want to focus on music right now. I definitely want to ride again, but I have some cool opportunities to play drums more, which I
That's
love.
very neat. That's very neat.
Looking at going back next year, not to do the race again necessarily, unless somebody wants to pay for it. So I'll throw that
Right. Right.
out. I really want to go back to Patagonia. A lot of more, lot more travel.
So
So,
yeah, because travel's exciting now. It's probably like normal travel is probably like yawn, boring, so what?
And I lived overseas and traveled foreign, a fair amount, but it had been a long time and I forgot how much I missed it. I love Buenos Aires. I love being in a foreign culture. Just love it.
That is so beautiful. Have you thought about like writing a book, doing a TED talk, or even doing a TED-like talk,
Maybe a TED-like talk. I have people asking for something at the farm. What I'd like to do is maybe do like a traditional Argentinian asado, which is the grill with the lamb, here at my farm, and kind of talk about it. I mentioned that I'm hoping to have Kansas come and do a clinic here, so maybe
Yeah.
we could even do a gaucho girl presentation, or I don't
Oh,
know.
I love that idea. Be sure and film that, by the way, so that the rest of us can see it, because not everybody's going to get to come to your clinic. But if you film that talk or whatever, I know people would want to see that.
And we definitely have bands. I always have music out here, and it's a great place. So that's what I'm looking at right now. Still settling in. My son's graduating from university in a few weeks, so I've got that to
Exciting.
look forward to.
Exciting. This is fabulous. Well, if someone is listening and they're thinking, okay, I need an epigenetic coach. I'd like to get rid of the noise and start focusing on the signal of what my body's telling me and get some guidance. How do they find you? Tell us how people find you.
So my website is geneticallynourished.com.
Okay. And we'll have this in the show notes.
Facebook is just Lori Kaplan.
Yep.
Instagram is ge at genetically nourished.
Okay.
Those are the easiest ways.
Right. And those will all be on the show notes as well if you're listening. Don't try to write genetically nourished while you're driving, please.
And
Those
we
of
can
you
put my
listening in the
email.
car.
We could put my
Yeah.
email there too.
And we'll put your email in the show notes as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And actually go ahead and give it if you don't mind. I'm sure people would appreciate having it.
Yeah, so it's horseshoegirl14 at
Okay.
gmail.com.
That's easy enough. Horseshoe girl. And then the number 14 at gmail.com. Beautiful. Well, Laurie, thank you for coming and satisfying and helping me scratch my itch for a lot of questions that I knew I had that I wanted to hear about this adventure. And for those of you listening, if you love this podcast, please share it with others. And if you want more content like this and want to know, be the first to know about my retreats or anything else that's going on, remember you can sign up for the Coaching Digest at lynncarnes.com. In the meantime, we will see you on the next podcast, and thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Creative Spirits Unleashed podcast. I started this podcast because I was having these great conversations and I wanted to share them with others. I'm always learning in these conversations and I wanted to share that kind of learning with you. Now, what I need to hear from you is what you want more of and what you want less of. I really want these podcasts to be of value for the listeners. Also, if you happen to know someone who you think might love them, please share the podcast and, of course, subscribe and rate it on the different apps that you're using because that's how others will find it. Now, I hope you go and do something very fun today.